from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. A White House official penned a searing op-ed identifying themselves as part of the steady state of or people within the Trump administration working to thwart President Trump's, quote, impulsiveness and, quote, pettiness. Trump criticized the New York Times for publishing the anonymous letter yesterday and responded with one-word tweet, traitor. The op-ed comes amid buzz of Bob Woodward's forthcoming book, which portrays a White House staff with little confidence in its president. And today on Forum, we're going to take up the topic with David French, who is senior fellow at the National Review Institute and senior writer for the National Review. Good morning, David French. Glad to have you.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
And I appreciate your being here. I also appreciate E.J. Dion Jr. joining us, columnist for The Washington Post and senior fellow of governance studies at the Brookings Institution. Welcome, E.J.
It's always good to be with you, and good to be with David French, too.
Good to have you with us. And we want to hear from you, our listeners. What do you think of the anonymous op-ed? What actions, if any, would you like to see dissenters in the White House take? And we welcome your calls. You can join us at our toll-free number. The number to call is 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, welcoming listeners to join the program. Let's go first with you, E.J., and let's begin by talking about, I want to get your response to this, but we heard Mara Liasson, NPR's political reporter, earlier today talking about this book in the wake of the Woodward book, and before that, the Michael Wolff book, and you can even include Omarosa's book in this. We're getting a picture of a White House that is pretty consistent and kind of composite with chaos, disarray, and dysfunction, and also a president out of control.
Right. Well, the title of Woodward's book is Fear, and there's a lot to be fearful of. I mean, putting aside all of the principal reasons people have for opposing Donald Trump, the picture that emerges from all the reporting that's been done, by the way, before Woodward and before this anonymous piece, but then since Woodward has got rich detail on this, it's a mess in there. It's chaos in there. When aides to the president are apparently taking papers off his desk because they fear he will sign them, this is not a chief executive you want in charge of your country. It really comes down to that. And, you know, I'm struck by the anonymous letter because, on the one hand, I kind of agree with Steve Schmidt, the former top aide to John McCain, who said, look, it's good that there's a message in a bottle being thrown out here. Although I think if the person is true to his or her principles, they really should come out and say who they are and they should resign. But the other thing is the letter itself is very circumscribed in its criticism. My colleague Greg Sargent at The Washington Post, a blogger, point out all the things that were not in this letter. And I put aside for the moment the fact that I'm a liberal, so there's a lot of stuff I disagree with what the administration is doing. But, you know, the racism and the ethno-nationalism, the corruption, the self-dealing, what Trump has done in terms of trying to intervene in investigations, these are things that ought to be in a letter like this and aren't. So I think this also shows the limits of the so-called resistance inside the White House.
Well, the letter, and let me go to you, David French. Already we have people like Mike Pompeo, Secretary of State, although he was a suspect for writing this anonymous letter, saying very strenuously and passionately that he was not. And people are saying Mike Pence because of the use of the word lodestar. There's all sorts of attempts. Maybe somebody who's just not even in the public eye that much, because there are about 1,000 people who work in that capacity that could call themselves or give themselves that title. But I'm interested, David French, in what you have to say about what we just heard from E.J. Dion. I think you agree with him, conservative versus liberal, but agree with him that this person should come out of the cold and declare themselves and resign and be open about it.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with E.J. on this. And I think in our very polarized times, this was one of the few areas of consensus you're actually seeing emerging online and elsewhere is, look, there is a difference between being an anonymous leaker who leaks about the president's television viewing habits or an anonymous leaker who leaks about there's chaos and confusion in the White House. But between the Woodward book and this op-ed, I think a couple of really bright lines were crossed. One is there's now allegations that the president's orders are just being flat out ignored, the president's desires are being thwarted by things as like stealing pieces of paper off his desk, that he's giving military orders that are not being complied with, not being respected. because the leaders of the military believe that they are out of line and not best for the United States of America. And then the key part of the op-ed in the New York Times, that there were whispers in the cabinet about the 25th Amendment. Now, that to me, there's lines, there's red lines, and then there's really, really bright red lines when somebody needs to come forward. And that's a really, really bright red line, because let's not forget, this cabinet was handpicked by Donald Trump. And if the handpicked cabinet of Donald Trump has whispered about the 25th Amendment, we need a human being to come forward, put his hand in the air in front of Congress, say who, what, where, why, and when, about when that, how that happened, the basis for the whispers, who engaged in the whispering, and what evidence supported the whispering, because that implies that we're in a very dangerous position. And I'm sorry, if those are the facts, if there was whispering about the 25th Amendment, I don't trust a person named Anonymous to protect the interests of the United States of America. I much more trust the constitutional mechanisms the founders put in place to protect our republic. And so that's why I think this person needs to step forward. It's ironic to me that he invoked, or he or she invoked, the memory of John McCain. You only have to show 1/100th the courage that John McCain showed in his career, including, you know, his ordeal in a North Vietnamese prison camp, to come forward and identify yourself and make your claims on the record.
Well, you're saying pursue this through a constitutional means. And I think, you know, there are people in the White House probably who are working there who may indeed agree with this anonymous person, but we don't know who they are because they haven't come out and stated for the record or taken off the cloak of anonymity. I'm just wondering, though, about some of the charges. I mean, you said, for example, that stealing papers from the president or taking them off his desk, that was Gary Cohen, who was a Democrat, who was a business advisor, who was credited with doing that. But there were also things about foreign affairs that seemed to imply that the president was impulsive, that he changed his mind second to second, moment to moment, that he really didn't understand things, and that he was beholden to Russia. Things, in other words, that do form a kind of picture when you look at the Woodward book and other, like I said, other books like Wolf's and so forth. Is there a picture here that seems to make sense to you, David French, or not?
Well, there's a picture that I think is very, very consistent with, I think, and I would be interested to hear EJ on this, but I think that you're going to talk to an awful lot of people around Washington who paint that same picture, that he doesn't know basic facts about foreign policy. He's extremely impulsive. He's extremely volcanic. He doesn't understand basic military strategies and procedures. And all of these things, you know, the better version of the way that he's moderated in his administration is you have people like General Mattis who calm him down, who explain to him the way things work. And then once he is further educated, that he moderates and makes a proper decision. The negative side of this is you have a president who's erratic and impulsive. And this is the picture that Woodward paints that I think is particularly dangerous, that he's erratic, impulsive, and ignorant. And rather than moderate him, explain to him public policy and international strategy and diplomacy, he's just ignored.
Well, there's fear here, EJ Dion. You mentioned it before, fear that he may become even more erratic and more volatile as a result of feeling that, you know, there's somebody who is out against him, or there's some kind of secret coup that's operating to try to essentially go antithetical to his wishes.
No, that is very troublesome. There was a powerful quote from someone in a Washington Post story yesterday saying he doesn't trust anyone. You cannot be a successful president if you can't trust anyone around you. You need trust in some people whose judgment you respect, and it's not clear he has any of that. And in terms of the overall picture, it really has been very consistent from the beginning. I mean, there have been hundreds of stories, interviews with scores and scores of people inside the administration, in the Post, in the Times, in the Wall Street Journal, and lots of other outlets that paint this picture of a very erratic person. And there's an irony in the anonymous piece in the Times, which is the idea that people didn't want to invoke the 25th Amendment because they were fearful of creating a constitutional crisis. But to have that piece out there And to say there were serious people inside the administration who thought that President Trump was incapable of doing a job, that creates a crisis all by itself. It cries out, as David suggested, for a lot more information about who is thinking what and why, because even a whisper of that, we have never heard of a whisper about the 25th Amendment about Barack Obama or George W. Bush or any president in recent years. And so the fact that that was even discussed should create enormous alarm in the country.
Talking with E.J. Dionne Jr., columnist with The Washington Post. His latest book is One Nation After Trump, A Guide for the Perplexed, the Disillusioned, the Desperate, and the Not Yet Deported. And also with us, David French, senior fellow with the National Review Institute and a senior writer for the National Review. Let me go right to your calls, and let's begin, Sam, with you. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. So my concern is about the suggestion by some, including some on your program, that the person who wrote the op-ed in the New York Times and criticized Trump's behavior should identify himself and resign. If everybody who disagrees with Trump in the administration resigned and left, you would be left with yes men. And I think that would be a more dangerous situation if the problems exist, which I think they do exist in the administration, and his behavior has been erratic. So I don't think that's such a good suggestion. I think that people who disagree with him and are trying to prevent the dangerous activities by him and his administration should stay in and should do what they can to protect the country. So I would like to see what the comments are in terms of how you justify that everybody who disagrees with Trump should resign and leave. How would that make the situation better? I think it would be more dangerous.
Yeah, Sam, I thank you for the call. And since both of our guests agree on this, either one of you can step up to the plate here. But I'm looking at a tweet from Dave who says, I think the author should say who they are and not resign. Keep working until fired. David French.
Yeah, I think there's a real issue here that we have to deal with is who do we trust more, or what do we trust more? Do we trust constitutional processes more or unnamed government officials? I trust constitutional processes more. And I think the effect, if these stories are true, and that's a big caveat here, if these stories are true, the effect of one or more, perhaps multiple people resigning and testifying under oath in the glare of television lights about the things that they have seen with their own eyes would be rather dramatic. I live in the middle of Trump country where there's a lot of talk about what's priced in and what's not priced in with Trump supporters. What's priced in with Trump supporters is an awful lot of sort of presidential misbehavior in the sense of the infidelity and the Twitter feed. They expect that. They also expect anonymous, quote unquote, deep state opposition. But what is not priced in is actual instability. That what's not priced in is actual real people testifying under oath to real instability. And if that is, and again, with the big caveat, if that is the case, I trust constitutional processes to protect this country far more than I trust unnamed and unknown public officials who are going to write an op-ed and say, don't worry, America, we've got your back.
Let's hear from E.J.
Dionne. Could I briefly just say something to the caller? I think it's a perfectly fair question that he asks, and I do hope there are people who stay in there to try to prevent the worst. But I think that somebody crosses a line when they write a piece like this. If we are to believe him and all the other accounts, there are other people in there who will be doing comparable things. When you go out there and write an explosive piece like this and make these charges, I think you undercut yourself if you're not willing to just step all the way out and say, you know, I'm putting my name on this. I like the suggestion on the tweet, stay in and get fired. But I think that there'll be other people around, we have to pray, who will try to contain the worst. But once you do something like this, I think you've got to own it.
Well, let me read some comments that are coming in. Another tweet from Jason who writes, the author should have the courage of convictions and actually do something while in a position to stop it. There's no honor in enabling a, quote, impetuous, adversarial, petty, and ineffective, that's from the op-ed, president who shows a preference for autocrats and dictators, also from the op-ed, to stay in office. Diana writes, the anonymous author is afraid just as Trump wants his cabinet. Trump rules by fear. And Walden writes, a cowardly action by someone who thinks we should be grateful that our country is being led by a handful of power-hungry people that no one elected while they dance around a lunatic that should be removed. Let me read a few more comments before we go to more of your calls. Maureen writes, I really hope we don't obsess about who the author is, but rather focus on what the letter says. And here's Joel, who says, I'm confused by what the news is here. Is there anything new or surprising about that op-ed? Trump's recent belittling of Sessions for the indictments of Republican congressmen before the midterms is all we need to know about this presidency. The tweet was a big deal, too. Yeah, go ahead.
Just real quick on that last one. Broadly, that is correct, that what we're reading here is entirely consistent with what we know, consistent with the Woodward book, consistent with all the reporting. So that's true. I think what is news is that somebody is alarmed enough that they would choose to go outside and do this. And we can sort of guess motives. I mean, one motive is there are some people on the Republican side who've gone along with Trump who are kind of preparing the way to distance themselves from Trump when it implodes. And they'll say, well, I was out there saying this, or I was doing this internally. That could be part of the motivation here. But the fact that someone was willing to do this is itself significant. But yes, a lot of the content is familiar.
And another caller joins us. Christina, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I have a question. I'm wrestling with the role of the New York Times as a paper. If their conclusion, you know, sort of leading to a conclusion that this is a sort of administrative coup, that the president really is not the one dictating orders, then is the New York Times almost facilitating this and in a responsible manner?
I'm glad you raised that, and I'd like to go to you, David French, on this. I mean, the president has condemned the New York Times. He's also condemned Bob Woodward, and so we get not only the question of how much we're to believe here, but what about the, you know, the president has called the New York Times the enemy of the people, as he has any kind of journalistic organ.
Look, assuming the New York Times did its due diligence and verified the identity of this individual, which it would be a journalistic scandal of epic proportions if it didn't, and I'm sure it did its due diligence. I don't fault the New York Times for publishing this at all, not at all. I think that the New York Times did what it should do. The question I have is whether the person who wrote the op-ed did it in the way he should do it, he or she. And that's where I have a problem. It's not with the New York Times publishing one of the more newsworthy op-eds in modern memory. It's with the author. Did he do this the right way? And I don't think so. I think that he needed to come forward publicly, and not necessarily in the New York Times, but in a mechanism and in front of a co-equal branch, well, not yet actually even co-equal, a supreme branch of government in Congress, and to put his hand in the air and testify under oath. Because, you know, one thing, going back to a previous point, was there anything new in this op-ed? Well, there was something new, that there were whispers in Trump's own handpicked cabinet about the 25th Amendment. That is new. And that's really, really important, because the 25th Amendment is a constitutional process to remove a president who's not able to serve. I mean, that is a tremendously important allegation. And if it's true, we need to know the details.
Let me read another comment from Julie. I don't call for the person to come forward and resign. I value this voice as one more in a collective of points of view about the current administration and president. To reveal the source of this opinion would effectively shut this person up and would discourage others from expressing their concerns. And a similar thought from Tina, who tweets, the idea of talking rationally with Donald Trump is nuts. He is decompensating before us. I'm grateful to Anonymous for providing guardrails. E.J. Dion, want to comment?
I am grateful to anybody in the administration who is trying to prevent really terrible things from happening. So I don't disagree with that. As I said earlier, if you're going to take the next step and do a piece like this, then I think you assume certain responsibilities that you didn't have if you were willing to stay anonymous inside trying to prevent the worst from happening. In terms of the New York Times, I'm not a big fan of anonymous pieces, period, but this one I think was sufficiently newsworthy. David's right about the 25th Amendment, and the fact that it exists is itself a piece of news. I think one of the interesting questions will be, who is the senior official? That the word senior official is vague. now perhaps intentionally so. The implication here is that this is a pretty important person. I hope when it all comes out in the wash, which things usually do, as long as we have a free press, that we will discover that this was a truly senior official and not somebody lower down. Because to take this step, I think the Times had to be convinced, at least I think that would be the ethical thing, that this is a really important voice in the administration, and that's why they are publishing it.
I was also, EJ, struck by the mention with a great deal of respect for John McCain in this letter, coming on the heels of the president not attending his funeral and saying things that were delayed, to put it mildly, and kind of a boilerplate. I think there's reason to maybe think that whomever this person is may be part of what was once thought of as a more establishment Republican, but that's just a guess. Teresa writes, I imagine the writer of the letter remains anonymous because they don't trust constitutional processes as these are currently dominated and controlled by the president and his party in power. And let me get another caller on here, and that's you, Sandra. Welcome.
Yes, hi, thank you. I have a couple of comments and a question. I think it's a last-ditched attempt by the Republicans to salvage their party before the midterms. And I think if he's as unhinged as they say he is, they really should invoke the 25th and not allow him to have any more high-level meetings with no one else in the room. My question is that, you know, Robert Reich has suggested this presidency should be annulled. Is there any way you can see that happening?
Yeah, this is, shall we say, a maverick point of view, thinking about McCain being a maverick, an annulment of the presidency, David French. Robert Reich has come out in a couple of places and said that's the way to go.
No, there's no possible way to annul this presidency. I mean, that's just, we just need to get that out there and put that to rest. I mean, the way you end a presidency, there's basically three ways. Vote him out of office at the end of his first term. Remove through impeachment and conviction in the Senate, or removal by the process of the 25th Amendment. I mean, those are the only ways. You don't annul a presidential election. There's no mechanism for annulling a presidential election. Not going to happen. No way. Not ever. And I see this a lot on Twitter, but it's just flat out not possible.
What about if there were mass resignations? And this is really in, you know, that kind of perhaps fantasy land or something along those lines, with testimony to Congress. I mean, there's a different path that could move along that route, couldn't there, E.J. Dion, just at least plausibly or conceivably?
First, I want to underscore something the caller said. I do think that we will begin to see Republicans, both for the midterms, but also for their longer-term reputation, Republicans who have been complicit with Trump. David is definitely not one of those, bless him, but Republicans who have been complicit with Trump, trying to distance themselves slowly and then more rapidly as time goes on. You saw some of that happen with Nixon when he was in office, where people stuck with him for a long time and then jumped ship. And I'm very sympathetic to the thinking behind Bob Reich's idea, which is that there was something fundamentally and deeply flawed about the election because of the foreign intervention, and therefore it ought to be annulled. Unfortunately, I have to agree with David on this question of, I don't know what kind of constitutional mechanism or legal mechanism there is to annul it. And a lot of me thinks that our best bet would be to vote the man out of office and to have the country say a very loud no to all of this. So there's no martyrdom, no talk of a deep state getting rid of him. It's the people saying this is a catastrophe. As I say, I wish there were a way to get Bob Reich's idea into the discussion in a plausible way. I just don't know quite how you get there.
Well, I'm going to read another comment, people weighing in on this left and right. William writes, a delusion in the op-ed about the successes which benefit tiny portions of the country speak to the broken ideology that convinces the staff to stay while manipulating and undermining a man who is tragically president. If they wanted to do right by the country, that op-ed would not have been anonymous, and they would be pushing to have him removed, but they won't because he's a useful idiot. Here's Rob as our next caller. Rob, you're on the air.
Yeah, thank you. Besides the fact that we could hopefully be protected by this guy not resigning, in other words, he's going to try to work from the inside, maybe he decided to remain anonymous because he thinks that this will drive Trump completely over the edge, because he'll be looking over his shoulder, his paranoia will go off the scale, and everybody will see that Trump was truly not stable enough to be president, and this is just going to make it come to a head.
It's an interesting notion, and I thank you for it. We'll let it stand, and we'll go to another caller and hear from Brian next. Brian, thanks for waiting. You're on.
Hey, good morning, Michael. Glenn Greenwald wrote a very good piece on this, and he sees the...
Brian, I'm sorry. Revelation. It's a bad connection. I can barely even hear you. It sounds like you're muffled, and I'm going to have to say goodbye, and maybe you can try back. Let me get another caller on from San Leandro. Kristen, hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Well, of course, this is a liberal's dream, this anonymous op-ed. However, given Trump's and the people around him sort of mad genius that they got to this position of power, we have to look at the way he has this ability to manipulate the media. And I'm very suspicious of the timing of this op-ed. There's some really, really important things happening in Congress with the Kavanaugh hearings. And, you know, Democrats make a point or two, and suddenly we're all talking about Trump again. I just really think we have to stay focused on getting rid of this guy however we can. And, of course, it's my dream that there are adults in the room helping our democracy, because I see him as the most serious threat to our democracy that we've ever had as a country.
All right. I thank you for your position and letting us know what it is. And Maurice writes, I can't help but wonder if this is a trial balloon to gauge public support for the 25th Amendment being used by the cabinet.
I wonder if that's true.
Yeah, it could be.
One thing I just want to say about liberals, there's nothing liberal about this letter or this piece. I mean, it really sounds like this person is indeed willing to hang on because he supports tax cuts, or she supports deregulation, supports most of the agenda. And it's in a way a commentary on why there are so few anti-Trump conservatives, because there are a lot of conservatives who like a lot of the policy being pursued by this administration. And so this person is perfectly happy with the rest of the policy. He's just warning us that Trump is completely unstable and he doesn't like his foreign policy. So it's a very circumscribed, although powerful, critique of Trump.
Final word from you, David French, with seconds left here.
No, I actually think that that's right. What you have here is a what I would say an establishment conservative who wants to have his cake and eat it, too. In other words, he wants to be at the levers of power, and he doesn't want Trump right there beside him. The problem is that Trump was elected by the people of the United States according to a constitutionally sound election process. And so if you're going to if you truly believe he is not fit to serve as president, the way to deal with that is not an anonymous op-ed. The way to deal with that is to appeal to constitutional processes. And unfortunately, he doesn't have the courage to do that.
And let
I
me
think
recommend
that is a real problem.
Recommend an article by David Frum, which takes your position, as you just stated, exactly in the New Atlantic. Thank you, David French. Good, always good to have you with us. Appreciate your being with
Thanks
us.
Thanks for having me.
David French is senior fellow with the National Review Institute, senior writer for the National Review. Thank you, E.J. Dionne. Always good to talk to you.
With you. Thank you.
E.J. Dionne is columnist with the Washington Post. I'm Michael Krasny.